This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of The Athletic St. Louis Style. My name is Don Pavlicek, and thank you very much for joining me today. Let's begin with a little hockey as the NHL season for the Blues heads into the final week or 10 days, and the Blues appear to be out of the playoffs. Seven Blues prospects to watch with playoff hopes dwindling and Jimmy Snuggerud staying in Minnesota. Stories by Jeremy Rutherford. How would Jimmy Snuggerud have looked in a St. Louis Blues uniform Thursday night in Nashville? Would he have been wearing number 81 as he has at the University of Minnesota? We don't know because earlier this week, Snuggerud announced he's planning to stay with the Golden Gophers for his junior season in 2024-25. The Blues, who took him in the first round of the 2022 NHL draft, will retain his rights until August 2026, when, if still unsigned, he would become an unrestricted free agent. In explaining his decision, Snuggerud told The Athletic that he leaned heavily on Minnesota Wild defenseman Brock Faber, who played together last season at Minnesota. "Yeah, I was talking to him a bunch," Faber confirmed to The Athletic's Joe Smith. "I told him, the opportunity is always going to be there. It will be great. Another year to develop, another year to learn, and another year to become a leader. He plays hockey to be a good teammate, to be a good person. I think that shows a lot about his character coming back for another year. When that time comes, he'll be ready." So there's no Snuggerud, but with Blues playoff chances getting slimmer after a 6-3 loss to Nashville on Thursday, it might be time to play the prospects as much as possible. The Blues had gone 8-2-1 in their past 11 games and could have pulled to within 4 points over the Predators with a win. But now, 7 points out of a wild card spot, with 6 games left in the regular season, it's looking like a long off season. Spoiler alert, the Blues lost last night to the San Jose Sharks in overtime, so their playoff odds are even worse now. Okay, back to the story. Zach Bolduc, Matt Kessel, and Tyler Tucker were all in the lineup in Nashville. Bannister indicated that it's been difficult to dress other young players because the Blues were battling for a playoff spot. "We're battling for a playoff spot," he said. "Guys deserve to be in the lineup that have won hockey games down the stretch here and put us in that position. But starting Saturday in San Jose, Zach Dean and Scott Perunovich could suit up too, instead of pending unrestricted free agents Kasperi Kapanen, Sammy Blais, or Marcus Scandella. Here's a closer look at how seven of the younger guys are faring and what others on the team are saying about them. Zach Bolduc, 21, a left and right winger. It's 2023-24 stats, 19 games, 2 goals and 2 assists. How he's looked. It's hard to imagine, but it wasn't long ago that some fans were calling Bolduc a bust. Now, not that he's cemented himself in the league, but he's made measurable progress since his call-up, and coaches say Bolduc hasn't looked out of place. His hefty shot gives him the potential to be a good middle six forward. Robert Thomas says, "I think Boldy has been aggressive on pucks. He's got a good stick. He's skating really well. He's got a good finishing touch, too. He's starting to get more looks and chances. I think they're going to go in." Then there's Zach Dean, age 21, a center. In 2023-24, 3 games, no points. These are just the NHL stats, by the way. How he's looked. Dean hasn't seen much action, but he's been a welcome addition since the season-ending injury to Oscar Sundquist, and you can see the tenacity that people say he possesses. The Blues have been reluctant to have both Bolduc and Dean in the lineup because of the playoff push, but that could change moving forward. Thomas says, "Diener, he plays such an honest, hard game. He's strong. He's physical. When he's in, he's been really good defensively. Those looks are going to start coming offensively. I'm really impressed with his maturity and the way he's committed to a 200-foot game." Scott Perunovich, age 25, defenseman, 2023-24 stats, 48 games, no goals, 15 assists. How he's looked. Perunovich hasn't played since hitting the 74 career games needed for the Blues to retain his rights this summer as a restricted free agent. Part of that is on him because of his struggles in the defensive zone and reluctance to shoot the puck. 31 shots. There's talent there, but it needs to come out on a more regular basis. Bannister, the coach, says, "Scotty at times has played to his potential. I think as of late, we need more from him. After a game like we played last game against San Jose," this was a week ago, San Jose game, We have to make changes, and he's one of the players that has to be better for us. But what I know about Scotty is he can be a really good player for us, and I think we need that more on a nightly basis from him, and more consistency in his game and what he does well. Matt Kessel, age 23 defenseman, 2023-24 stats, 33 games, no goals, 4 assists. How he's looked. Few could have predicted that Kessel was going to play 30-plus games this season. He stepped in when the Blues had an injury in December and has made it difficult to keep him out of the lineup. He has perhaps shown enough that the club could trade a veteran defenseman and feel comfortable about him as a replacement. Justin Falk says, Kess has come in and played well. He's got a smile on his face every day, too. You can tell he really enjoys it. He's got a lot of upside, too. He's finding his way and has been playing good, and I think he's going to play for a real long time in this league. Tyler Tucker, age 24 defenseman, his 2023-24 stats, 20 games, 1 goal, and 1 assist. How he's looked? It's been a numbers game all season for Tucker, and the limited playing time could have an impact on his development. To his credit, he's dealt with the situation like a pro. His niche is always going to be physicality, which doesn't always mean fighting. If he continues to show toughness, he'll be a valuable asset. Falk says, Tux has been an unbelievable guy. He's been in a tough spot. He hasn't played much. He's done everything that's been asked. Guys love him in the room. He's a real good teammate. Nikita Alexandrov, 23-year-old center, has no goals and 1 assist in 19 games this season. How he's looked? It's been a disappointing season for Alexandrov, who showed promise when he made the team out of training camp in 2022. There have been chances for him to grab a spot in the lineup, but turnovers and inconsistency have prevented that from happening. He's been passed over, but there's still time for him to show that he can do it. Coach Bannister says of Nikita, I think with Nikki, he's working. Nikki's just got to bide his time. He's continued to work on this game, off the ice and in practice. He's just got to be ready for his opportunity. And really, that's what it is. When your opportunity comes, you have to be able to jump on it. Then there's goalie Joel Hofer, 23-year-old. In 2023-24, he has played in 27 games with a 13-12 record, a 2.74 goals against average, and a .915 save percentage. All good numbers. How he's looked. It would be hard to draw up a much better rookie season for a young goalie than the one Hofer has had. Not only has he played well enough to give starter Jordan Binnington a breather at times, but there hasn't been much of a drop-off when he's in the net. Hofer may not have seen many games the rest of the way if the Blues were still in the race, but now he could see a few more. Bannister says, I've watched him for 3 years now in the AHL and NHL, and he's an outstanding goaltender. He's going to have a long career in the NHL. Let's just stick with the Blues here in hockey and another story by Jeremy Rutherford. A sentimental story here. Kelly Chase, in his own words, cancer is just another fight for the ex-NHL enforcer. This is Kelly Chase as told to Jeremy Rutherford. It makes me laugh when they ask the alumni to wear credentials at St. Louis Blues games. Wayne Gretzky built the league. Brett Hull built the rink they're playing in. A guy from the NHL stopped me one time and asked me, who are you? I took his hand off my chest and said, who the F are you? He said, I'm Joe Blow. I said, well, if you've been around here so much, you should know who I am, because I've been coming here for 35 effing years and nobody's asking me who the F I am. This is Kelly Chase talking, by the way. It's not about me. I want to make that clear. I want to make light of it more than anything. But my whole thought process is, where are we going if we don't even know where we came from? There has to be an understanding of the community and what it means. In St. Louis, the game was built on the shoulders of guys like Bobby Plager. Teams rely on them to keep their tradition going. Some guys are mascots and other guys are ambassadors. Some guys want to sit quietly, wave once in a while, and let the crowd cheer for them. Then there are guys who want to hug and usher or give a kid a pin. Those guys are ambassadors. Bobby was an ambassador. He made sure that people loved this game and this team. I've never considered myself of Bobby's ilk as far as being an ambassador. I don't deserve that. I wasn't a very good player, but I was fortunate enough to do the only thing I ever wanted to do in my whole life. So I have an obligation to walk around Enterprise Center, get to know everyone, and thank them. I know more of the security guards, elevator operators, and restaurant workers than the people who are their bosses. But I hadn't seen those faces in a long time, so I wasn't ready for what happened on December 23rd. I didn't really want to go to the Blues game that night, but Gretzky bullied me into going. It was an outpouring of support, but the people were all in tears. I told my wife, Ray Lynn, "They're scared." She said, "They're not scared of you." I said, "They're not scared of me. They're scared for me. I'm supposed to be the tough guy, and they all believe I'm dying." Tony Twist was with me, and Twister said, "Ray Lynn, they're scared. We made a living out of knowing when people are scared, and they're scared." Last November, I was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, AML. When the doctor came into the room, he introduced himself and said, "I want you to know you don't have gout." I said, "I know." He said, "The infections you have, chemo is going to get rid of it." I said, "What?" He said, "You have AML. Then he said, "I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know who you are. I don't know anything about hockey. But the people around here seem to think you're the toughest guy to walk the soil of St. Louis. So we're going to come up with a plan." I said, "Okay." He asked me, "Do you want the prognosis?" I said, "No." He said, "You don't want any percentages?" I said, "Nope. There's winners and losers, right? There's two teams, right? Well, you're just going to put me on the right team." We went through the plan, which was putting me on a trial drug. The next day, I was getting a bone biopsy. The next day, I was in the hospital with an infection and a 104-degree fever. I was so badly infected, they had to delay chemo for a few days. They were going to lance this little cyst on my ass, but they ended up cutting something out of me that was a lot bigger. That led to heart complications, so they had to delay chemo a few more days. The hardest part was being believable in front of my kids. Will, who's 24, Ben, who's 22, and Luke, who's 20. I've always had this thing where I tell them, "Just read the paper." What that means is, when I'm on a flight and we're hitting turbulence, and I look up at the pilots and they keep reading the paper, I go back to the card game. But if they start reaching for masks and seatbelts, I start panicking a little bit. So if you're in a leadership role, you just read the paper, because then everybody believes everything is going to be all right. But for my boys to see me the way I was, they knew I wasn't reading the paper. I lost my dad when I was young, so I had to take care of people. When someone dies in our family, I go pick up the pieces and say, "All right, here's what we're going to do." When someone is sick in our family, I take charge. When a crisis happens with one of my companies, I take charge. But I couldn't get a hold of this cancer, so I had to say, "I need help. I don't know how to beat this." I needed to get my arms around what I was fighting. I don't mind fighting. I'll fight anybody, anywhere, anytime. But I like to see the size of the guy, and I didn't know the size of the guy. I didn't know what hand he fought with. I didn't know if he could take a punch. It turns out he's all of that. I took my Peloton into the hospital. My doctor was like, "What are you doing with that?" I said, "I'm going to ride it." He said, "Ride it? You're going to be laying under it when you start chemo." I said, "We'll see." He said he had seen people bring in extra TVs, gaming stations, and lazy boy chairs, but never a Peloton. So I bet him that I'd ride that thing for 30 minutes a day, and I rode it 35 to 45 minutes a day for 24 days. I did 2,800 push-ups and 2,800 sit-ups in 24 days. It would take me all day to do 100 push-ups. I would do 10, and then I would do 5, and then I'd do 2, and I would write 17 on the wall. I was trying to walk at least 7 miles a day, so I would ask the nurses at the front desk to keep track of my laps. I'd get around to the front counter, and the nurse would say, 8. I'd say, 9. Don't worry, I'll count. My old Blues teammates are giving me a hard time, saying, "You're working out more in the hospital than you did as a player." I just didn't want to be married to the bed. The doc would tell the nurses, "If he wants to be unhooked from his drip for 2 hours so he can work out, unhook him." They were like, "But he's supposed to be getting this fluid." And the doc was like, "He knows his body. He knows what he's trying to accomplish here." I'm not going to lie, though. Chemo knocks the S out of you. It makes your bones ache and you're tired. Some days you're in a better spot than others. You're trying to look like that person people are looking up to, but it's hard. You're alone and you have your pity thoughts. And all you can do is just try to get your S together. The hardest part is when you see other people hurting. You want to tell them, "Don't worry, I'm going to be okay." But they see what they see. I don't want to name drop, but I have a friend who's really close to Lance Armstrong. Lance messaged me and said, "How are you feeling?" I asked him about riding the bike when he was battling cancer and going through chemo. He said when he first got on the bike, he looked like a six-year-old because he could barely turn the pedals. But when the chemo was wearing off, it felt like what he'd been doing his whole life. Then he told me a story about how he walked through the hospital cafeteria one day and saw this apple fritter. He said it looked so good, but he was really conscious about what he was putting in his body. But finally he bought it, and for 10 days in a row, he ate an apple fritter. He said, "Sometimes you've just got to say F it." So one day I saw an Oreo cookie sundae and ate it, and I sent Lance a text with a picture of it. He replied, "Attaboy." The outpouring of people who came to the hospital was unbelievable. Rick Tockett, 5 hours. He comes in and wants to talk about a kid on his team. "How would you handle managing this guy's character?" Alex Steen. He'll call me in the first period of every Blues game and ask me questions. I had a president of an NHL team ask me to call a player the other day, and the player got a Gordie Howe hat trick the next night. I felt pretty grateful that guy was asking for my opinion. I felt pretty grateful that guys were asking for my opinion. Excuse me. Cam Neely, TJ Oshie, Kirk Muller, Barrett Jackman, Tim Peel, Twister, he was there every other day, and sometimes the guy was there at 5 in the morning. I'd wake up and I'm like, "What are you doing here? All these guys just showed up or called every day, and I feel bad because I'm going to miss some people." Nelson Emerson, Todd McClellan, Brendan Shanahan, Brett Hull. My buddies flew in from Saskatoon. They said, "We want to come in and see our captain." I said, "Don't do that." They said, "We're coming." And they jumped on a plane and stayed with me for a couple of nights. I feel pretty lucky with the support system that I have. I realized when I got sick, I meant more to people than just the Blues. The outreach has been off the charts. I have pages and pages of text messages, and with the letters and baskets coming to the hospital, it's been overwhelming. There will be a lot of paybacks coming once I get this behind me. I think I'm going to have a much better sense of awareness of things around me that I can be better at because of this experience, especially helping people. I recognize people who are sick a lot better. Even though I did a lot of cancer visits and a lot of fundraisers, I don't think that my scope was as focused as it is now. I recognize when people are struggling a lot better. There was a time in my life when I used to think that mental health was a weakness. I used to think that if you were that person, you weren't going to survive. Now I realize how important it is. Not that I'm going to take on the world and try to accomplish what Lance Armstrong did, but it's time to do a little more. That's why I wanted to do this charity hockey game. It's called Puck Cancer, and the proceeds are going to Siteman Cancer Center and the V Foundation for Cancer Research. We're lucky enough to have a platform as hockey players, and me getting leukemia, it has shined a light on. No matter how tough someone thinks they are or might be, anybody can get it. That understanding is important. There's a litany of people that need your help. So if doing this game helps one kid, then we've done the right thing. This research is important. 10 years ago, they were nowhere near where they are now. And 10 years from now, they're going to be nowhere near where they are right now. The important thing is believing that you're going to get better, fighting like you're going to get better, and the rest will take care of itself. The more fights you have, the less you become worried about the outcome because you feel like maybe the worst has already happened. Am I scared? I don't know that I think about that. I've never even Googled leukemia. I know where my pain threshold is, and I know the perseverance I've had. I just feel like it's a bump in the road. I'll learn from the tough parts and go on to the next thing. All of the pictures accompany the story. There's one of Kelly. Looks to be sitting maybe in a press box at a game, wearing a red Canada hat on, a gray coat with a thumbs up sign, looking at the camera. And then there's a picture of the family, Luke, Kelly, Ray Lynn, and Ben Chase. Some big rugged boys. Wow, they're big dudes. I think my boys played hockey against a couple of these kids. They played for Marquette. And then we've got one more here. This is a picture of TJ Oshie with Kelly Chase. Kelly has his arm around TJ Oshie. Looks like maybe they're in the hospital. And both smiling at the camera. So Good to see Kelly Chase battling this disease. Let's talk a little Cardinal baseball here, as the Cardinals have completed their first week or so of the regular season. Cardinals ride 5-run rally to home opener win over the Marlins. This club is going to fight. Stories by Katie Wu. An unofficial holiday in the greater St. Louis area. Opening day at Busch Stadium just hits differently. 40-degree temperatures did little to deter over 47,000 fans from attending the St. Louis Cardinals home opener Thursday afternoon, with streets, restaurants, and bars downtown packed as early as 9 a.m. The excitement for the day mirrored that of the team. An off-season removed from one of the most disappointing seasons in franchise history, the Cardinals arrived at their ballpark eager to give their fan base something to cheer about. They provided a performance that brought exactly that. Fueled by a 5-run seventh inning and without several starters, the Cardinals took advantage of a slew of defensive miscues by the Miami Marlins and rallied their way to an 8-5 victory. It's difficult to draw meaningful conclusions about a team just 1 week into the season, but there's one thing to note about the Cardinals so far. They sure are scrappy. If I can narrow it down to one thing, this club is going to fight, manager Ollie Marmol said after the game. I think we've shown that in a short period of time. If there's one thing we're going to do, we're going to fight. There's not a whole lot of panic in that group. Numerous injuries ranging in severity led to the team being shorthanded, so much so that Marmol was not able to set a lineup until 3 hours before game time. Matt Carpenter landed on the 10-day injured list with a right oblique strain before Thursday's game, and Wilson Contreras and Brendan Donovan were sidelined after they were hit by pitches in Wednesday's loss to the San Diego Padres. Already down Tommy Edmond, Lars Nootbaar, and Dylan Carlson, Marmol had to get creative with the 10 available position players he had for first pitch. He ultimately went with a lineup that had Victor Scott II leading off, Michael Ciani in left field, and Ivan Herrera hitting cleanup. But the lineup, unorthodox as it was, came through quickly. Ciani laid out for a sinking liner and secured it for an out on the first play of the game. An inning later, Herrera, who didn't know he was hitting cleanup for the first time until after batting practice, hammered a 1-0 sinker from Marlins starter Ryan Weathers, crushing it 414 feet for his first career home run. Running the bases, looking at the fans, that was a dream come true for me, Herrera said. I think that was the best moment, and winning the game, that was one of the best things I've experienced in baseball. The one-run lead wouldn't hold, and the Cardinals' grit would be tested. Lance Lynn limited the Marlins to 1 run and 7 strikeouts over 4 innings, but served up back-to-back home runs to Josh Bell and Jake Berger in the 5th to give Miami a 4-1 lead. The Cardinals trailed 5-3 heading into the 7th. With their heart of the order due up, they once again showed the gumption and resilience they often lacked last season. An error on a ground ball by Luis Arraez sparked a St. Louis rally. Paul Goldschmidt reached safely on the booted ball and advanced to second on a hot shot single from Nolan Arenado. Herrera came through again, singling in Goldschmidt, and he and Arenado scored on a Nolan Gorman double. Jordan Walker's flyout moved Gorman to third, and he scored on an RBI single from Alec Burleson. The Cardinals took advantage of another defensive mistake one play later when right fielder Jesus Sanchez couldn't come up with a fly ball down the right field line for Mason Wynn. The ball clanged off Sanchez's glove, allowing Burleson to score the inning's 5th run with ease, while Wynn raced around third for an easy triple. The Marlins, the only team in baseball yet to win a game, couldn't recover. Jojo Romero recorded a 1-2-3 eighth inning, and Ryan Helsley slammed the door for the save, preserving a convincing win for a Cardinals team that just won't quit. "This team is so confident in the guy behind them," Wynn said. "It's who wants it next. Right now it feels like a race to get to the bat rack." "We take advantage," he added. "We took advantage of that error at second base and just kept it going. None of these guys in here are selfish, man. It's really just hit it and pass it back. Who's the next guy up?" With that mindset, we're all ready to go every day, and we're all confident, every single person in this clubhouse. Perhaps that's the most convincing element of Thursday's performance. Trailing by 3 and with 8 players on the injured list and 2 more on the roster but unavailable to play, the Cardinals clawed their way to a win with a spunky spirit that was noticeably missing last season. For a team that will be facing heavy scrutiny this year, they sure have responded encouragingly. "The energy is there," Contreras said. "The at-bats that we're taking and the energy we're putting in and day out is just amazing. I think we're going to have a good year. That's what we worked for, and that's what we're here for." At long last, Cardinal baseball is back at Busch Stadium. Thursday's victory served as a reminder of what that should look like. And another Cardinals story. Cardinals' series win over the Padres underscores their emphasis on quality starts. Stories by Katie Wu. The St. Louis Cardinals have clearly explained why they structured this year's rotation in the fashion they did. They identified durability as a desired trait. Quality starts are coveted. That is what fueled the Cardinals in their three-game series against the San Diego Padres last week. In the first two games, Kyle Gibson and Miles Michaelis notched back-to-back quality starts, a feat accomplished only 9 times by last year's team. In his Cardinal debut, Gibson spun 7 innings in a 6-2 win, allowing 2 runs, 4 hits, and 2 walks with 4 strikeouts. Michaelis followed with his own 2-run effort, scattering 7 hits over 6 innings with a walk and 4 strikeouts in a 5-2 victory. The Cardinals were unable to complete the sweep, falling 3-2 on Wednesday, but Zach Thompson was able to grind out 5 innings of 2-run ball despite lacking command. All 3 outings underscored the importance of equipping a rotation that can rack up innings. One thing I think our rotation is going to be good at is keeping the bullpen fresh, Michaelis said. Being able to eat up innings, especially when we need to, our bullpen will come out and lock that game down. St. Louis posted just 48 quality starts last year, sitting in the bottom third of the league. But when they did record one, they usually fared well. St. Louis went 35-13 last year when their starter recorded at least 6 innings and allowed 3 runs or fewer. That's the model they hope to stick to in 2024, just more frequently. Early in free agency, the Cardinals targeted Gibson and Lance Lynn, pitchers known for their ability to make starts and eat innings. Those two, combined with Michaelis, who was one of just 4 pitchers to record at least 200 innings last year, will be relied on heavily, with Steven Matz being built up conservatively and Sonny Gray still on the mend. Matz, who was brought along slowly this spring due to his injury history last season, was on a pitch count of 80 in his first start. He should be a full go for his next start, which will come Saturday against the Miami Marlins, but manager Ollie Marmol won't push Matz this early. Gray was originally slated to make his first of 3 planned rehab assignments with AAA Memphis on Wednesday, but the organization opted to have him pitch in a simulation game with AA Springfield due to inclement weather. Memphis's game was ultimately rained out, and keeping Gray on a schedule is vital to his rehab plan. He was slated for 50 pitches and will aim to push that total to around 70 in his next outing, tentatively planned for Tuesday. Based on scheduling and if his recovery goes according to plan, Gray's Cardinals debut could come as early as April 15th against the Oakland A's, the team that drafted him. Until then, the Cardinals will continue looking to Thompson, whose velocity has been down significantly in both of his starts this year. Last year, Thompson sat mid-90s with his fastball, but this year his four-seamer has not topped 94 miles per hour. Thompson described it as a timing issue, has been working extensively with pitching coach Dusty Blake to figure out the mechanics causing the velocity drop. Already, though, the Cardinals see more poise out of Thompson. Things spiraled quickly for him in the bottom of the first on Wednesday. After Xander Bogaerts led off the frame with a single, Thompson walked 3 batters and forced in a run. He ultimately struck out Iggy Rosario with the bases loaded to end a threat. That game could have gotten ugly right there, Marmol said to reporters after the game. Obviously, he would have wished to have his command to start the game, but he was able to settle in and battle through it. There isn't much to draw from definitively after 1 week of a 162-game season, but one thing the Cardinals did show over their first 7 games was how their starting pitching staff will influence their success. Not one starter recorded a quality start during the team's 4-game series against the Los Angeles Dodgers, and the Cardinals went 1-3, with their lone win coming in extra innings. But a much sturdier performance from the rotation in San Diego resulted in a series win. That's the model the Cardinals will aim to follow this year. And speaking of the Cardinals rotation, a national perspective here, ranking all 30 MLB starting rotations as the 2024 season begins. This is by Jim Bowden. So let's see what he says about the Cardinals. Is the Cardinals ranked 20th? Starting rotation of Miles Michaelis, Zach Thompson, Lance Lynn, Steven Matz, Kyle Gibson, Sonny Gray, and Drew Rahm. The latter two are on the injured list. The Cardinals spent $99 million on free agent starting pitchers this past offseason, landing Gray, 3 years, $75 million, Gibson, 1 year at $13 million, and Lynn, 1 year at $11 million. Gray hamstring strain, a three-time All-Star, started the season on the IL, but is expected back relatively soon. Michaelis provides innings, 201 and a third in 2023, as do Gibson, 192, and Lynn, 183 and two-thirds, while Thompson and Matz round out the rotation. The Cardinals have the position players to win the division, but do they have the starting pitchers after Gray? It's an aging rotation that has to be considered a huge question mark, even after the money they spent. By either ranked right behind the Brewers, the Reds, and the Cubs by Jim Bowden. So interesting. And on that note, I will conclude this week's edition of The Athletic, St. Louis Style. Again, my name is Don Pavlicek. Thank you very much for listening today.